Meeple Night, Episode 17, a podcast reflects on its 2021. Welcome to Meeple Night, a podcast about board games past, present, and future. In today's episode, we discuss our recent plays and recap our top 10 new-to-us games played in 2021. I'm Andrew Caprell, and here's my co-host, Edmund's iPhone, Josh Knight.
Good evening, everyone. So a little insider joke there. My Apple products decided not to recognize their fellow Apple products and apparently tried to pair with Edmund's iPhone.
Darn you, Edmund, yeah. Wherever you are.
Yeah, Edmund. Thanks, buddy. Well,
that's funny.
Tonight's personal section, I thought I'd do something a little different. I thought I would spring it on you at the last minute here. And
what?
Instead of asking what you've been up to, what is one thing you're most looking forward to during the holidays? Because I know you're going to Michigan, but what is something, what's like a tradition or something just to prove that, you know, you're a person and not a robot?
Yeah, that's a good one. So I think the one thing I'm most looking forward to is, it's a second half of a tradition. So the first, we make homemade pierogi in my family for Christmas dinner and then goes into Christmas breakfast / brunch. So I was not there and generally I'm not for the making part, which is like first or second week of December. Now that we
probably the
Virginia.
Worst part of it.
Yep. So I'm just there for the consumption aspect of it.
Typical man.
Yeah. So they're delicious. Anybody who hasn't had them, I mean, they're basically just like a Polish take on a dumpling. They're a bread flour dumpling stuffed with mashed potatoes and cheese, or just cheese, or jam, or sauerkraut. That's actually probably sauerkraut or just potatoes and cheese are my two favorite. But those are like what I grew up with. I don't do the like any meats in them. I don't know if that's traditional or not.
So that's what's made you big and strong?
Yeah.
Yeah. And able to combat bread. The Michigan winters?
Yeah. Bread and carbs. Yes. Because bread and carbs are different. So. Yeah.
Of course. Apparently in the north.
Potatoes and bread. Yep. Carbalicious. How about yourself? What is, what's one tradition other than watching Christmas Vacation?
1,000 times. Well, for us, we normally do a present on Christmas Eve, and something that has transitioned over the years, because when we were little, our parents would usually give us a video game or something to play with. It was something to keep you occupied, essentially, until Santa came the next day. And as the years progressed, that didn't really happen as much, because if my father got a video game and I got a video game, we would all have to play it on the same TV, like in the living room, right? And it just wouldn't work. So it got to the point that we started, maybe one of us would get a video game that we could still play, like Call of Duty or something like that, because my dad loves like the shoot 'em up games. But what we would do instead was get a quote unquote family game, something that all the family could come together on Christmas Eve night to do something. And it's usually a stupid party game, right? It was usually my mom would go down to Target or Walmart or something like that and just pick up something that she caught her eye based on, you know, what she saw walking down the aisle. And that's something that we've done was, it was just, it's a casual night. When we were little, it was like a big fancy Christmas meal. We don't do that anymore. My mom got very sick one Christmas Eve, and my dad and I just went to Pizza Hut and got a pizza. And so we had a pizza, we played video games together. And that we've kind of kept that tradition up. So it's like we make chili, and my mom may or may not put beans in the chili if she remembers. And she does make a good chili, though, and she does have the beans in there. But we do chili, a couple little sandwiches, and we play a board game, believe it or not, of all things.
Yeah, so it's been in there for a long time. No, that's a cool story, though, behind like why you do what you do, right, for the tradition. And sometimes those little simple things that like mess up, that's in air quotes for everybody who's listening because you can't see, which is everybody. But
this isn't a video podcast yet.
No. We're not that confident in what we look like.
Oof, no. Not when I'm on nights. Yeah, I think I might turn the screen off for you.
Yeah. No, but yeah, like when it gets messed up, sometimes it changes it and creates a good memory.
Yeah, you just have to evolve and roll with the punches.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So maybe evolving and rolling with the punches. What have you been playing lately?
Ooh. All right. So I somehow, despite Nicole being on nights, or actually maybe because Nicole was on nights, I have played a lot. And it actually only one of these. No, just kidding. Two of them are solo. So 67%. I'll start with my not solo one, which is I don't think I talked about this. Teotihuacan, City of Gods. I think you talked about this, but or maybe we just talked about it in top tens or something.
Okay. Tell
but,
me more.
But with the late pre-classic period and the expansion period. So wow. Okay. I have played late pre-classic period before, which is the first big box expansion. There's also a small box, Shadows of Zitle, I believe. Or Zittle. I don't know how to pronounce that. Didn't look it up. And then the expansion period is the newest big box. And the late pre-classic period offers the standard stuff, you know, starting player powers, seasons, which give a variable event type thing that everyone has to deal with that adjusts how scoring is done. So I like that a lot. The expansion period adds quite a few different things. And I played this, I only played it at two. And it opened up the game quite a bit. So it adds this board where you can put your guys out that you're trying to conquer different regions of Mesoamerica. And that kind of offered a whole new avenue to do. And then it introduced these shamans that are moving around instead of dice. Hmm. So that's kind of... there's only four spaces they can go. They go the opposite direction of dice, and their value doesn't matter. But they also have this wild resource, obsidian, that can stand in for anything. And between the shamans and the obsidian, the game was wide open, which
okay.
doesn't bother me any. I played it with Brian, and he tends to favor really tight games, mm-hmm. and he did not like this expansion. This particular play, we actually stopped about at the end of the first eclipse, and the obsidian kind of made that happen. Okay. It made it so it was too easy to get obsidian in a two-player game, and it kind of slowed down the game. We played almost 2 hours and got through one eclipse.
Wow.
And that was not because we were being AP. It just literally took that long because you didn't have to move your guys to get resources.
Yeah.
And so you weren't retiring anybody or progressing them or whatever. So, sorry, that does presume you know a little bit about Teotihuacan already, yeah. but I would definitely play it again. I think I would play it at four if I was going to include the shamans. But otherwise...
But you're also gambling, though, if it took that long for one eclipse and there's three eclipses in the game... With a four-player game, that's a Twilight Imperium potentially.
Yeah, so I think the other issue, though, is two-player, the eclipse marker starts at 10, and in four-player, it starts at 12, so it's not different enough. Like, unless we played it wrong, maybe I was supposed to adjust it down further, and I missed that for the Shaman's expansion, but I don't know. I would do it at four because it does change the way that the shaman works. It definitely changes the way the map works. Okay. I would try it again with Nicole because we like open games, but I will not be trying it again with Brian at two.
Well, I'm interested in it, and maybe we'll hear it a little bit later in this same podcast.
I presume.
But before we get into that, I wanted to discuss my banter topic for tonight, which is going to be Fresh New Spin.
Okay.
It's games that we've mentioned on the podcast before, in some form or fashion, but either I've finally played them in some capacity or just a different expansion to it. So we'll get into it directly and talk about Role Player Adventures, which is designed by Keith Mateka, Peter and James Ryan, and published by Thunderworks Games. Now, obviously, we just reviewed this one, the Role Player, the one-off, recently, but this is the campaign-style game centered in that same universe. You will take your character through 10 chapters and utilize dice rolls with card manipulation to achieve success in attribute challenges and combat. And your choices and actions matter. Sort of like real life, right? Well, if you make a decision in the first chapter, you get a specific theme card, which could be referenced in a later chapter. You also decide if you want to stay loyal to the Kingsguard, or maybe the religious group, or even the Dragul, aka the very enemy you were sworn to defeat. I have liked my play so far. I'm about halfway through, and I decided I kind of just needed a break. It's a little bit of a lengthier campaign, so I packed everything up, but I'm going to bring it back to the table shortly enough. And I would say if you enjoy Role Player, but wanted a campaign, a little more meat on the bone, maybe some kind of legacy style elements, this really is a great game.
Nice. Yeah, I know when we were talking about Andor over text, you had said that this was a, I mean not better version of that, but like that fantasy role playing aspect, more modern, right?
Yeah.
And in a universe that we definitely like, with the art that's much improved, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's really good, and kind of gives me a little of Sleeping Gods by Ryan Lockett. Kind of, it's very much open box. You can get pinned in a little bit, but at the same time, as soon as the story's over, you actually have the ability to go back and explore within that chapter, which is pretty cool. Or you could say, you know what, I'm good, and I can just move on and go right to the end of that chapter and advance the story. I think that's it's pretty cool.
So if you explore the story, then does that mean you just like you don't get experience and stuff, and so you're just kind of seeing what else the world has to offer, or how does
you can still get experience? You still could potentially find things, and it reminds me of some video games, right?
Yeah,
there's some things that if you go talk to this specific person, it's going to advance you to the next level or whatever it is. But before you do so, you can go just explore this town more and pick up a bunch of loot or whatever it might be. I think it's cool. Or maybe you still run into some bandits that attack you.
So
it's cool.
I will have more follow up questions after my next game that I talk about.
Bring it on.
My next game is in a similar vein, and that would be one that you lent to me and I was supposed to play like 3 months ago. That's Destinies.
Hey!
Designed by Mikhail Golubovsky and Philip Miljanski. Published by Lucky Duck Games. So it's a open world RPG kind of game. Open world's a little bit loose of a term there.
Yes.
You kind of move about and it tells you to draw different cards when you go to certain regions. Kind of reminds me of Mansions of Madness, where you'll have different pieces of the board that you go out and take, and you're creating the world and interacting with it. And it has an app that guides this experience. And kind of the difference maker between this and Mansions of Madness is that this is competitive if you play it with multiplayer. It's soloable without doing multiple characters, and there was one other thing. The way that it does roll the resolves a little different. It does it has a board that you kind of set up a pegs. I think they're numbered 2 through 12, and then when you roll dice, you have two main dice that are numbered 1 through 4. You always roll those, and then you have extra purple dice. Sorry, I'm forgetting the thematic names for these. And you roll those, and those have to be used up. So you can choose to use them, and they give you a boost. And so basically, success or failure is based on, let's say you roll a 10, and you have pegs in the 6, the 7, the 9, and the 11 slot. Then 6, 7, and 9 are each a success because they're all 10 or below, and then your 11 is not a success. So that's kind of an interesting way to go about success. I like that mechanism twist, but this one fell a little bit short for me. I think my problem is that I well, twofold. My minor problem with it is that you don't know what you need for success or failure when mm-hmm. you go into a check, right? Which is very much like any RPG. So, you know, I get it. But it's different than a lot of board games experiences that I, at least that I'm like thinking of Gloomhaven. I generally know what I need to get to succeed and get a hit or something like that, right?
Yep.
This I don't know. I just have to guess how hard do I think it is and then how much success do I need or not. And you don't get to see before you decide. My bigger problem was that, and this might have just been because it was solo, but I kept getting taken out of the world a lot. Part of it was, I think, the app, because a lot of the interaction is done on the map, or sorry, the app, APP.
Yep.
And then you're pressing stuff on there, and then you go back to your card or roll the dice. And then the other thing was there's just a lot of fiddling, like find this card in the stack, grab it. Find this map tile, flip it up. Find this chit component, put it on. I stopped doing the chits because it was too much maneuvering. I might give this a try again with the main campaign. I only did the intro scenario. And usually I give it a second try on the main thing. But my worry is just that if my main concern is on being taken out of the experience from having to manage everything, then it might just not work for me. But I think that's also just something that I'm not used to as much. Whereas I think you are primarily a solo player. That is what you are used to in. You are the manager of games generally, even when we play games competitively. So,
yeah, it's kind of reflecting back. I think for me, it was a better version of Seventh Continent. Because Seventh Continent, you put in a lot of effort to determine all the, you know, put these tiles out, like, for solo.
Yeah.
Again. And this one kind of just streamlined it a lot better. Now,
gotcha.
I will admit that first story, if I remember correctly, was just okay. It got better and better and better.
Yeah.
And I think some of it is you get so involved with what's going on in the game itself that you just want, I keep wanting to play. I don't know. I did it more, I think I told you, do the adventure style. Don't try to beat the clock or whatever.
I did explore style. Okay, yeah.
Good. I think, I don't know. I just thought that was enjoyable. It was it was a neat little package. Five one-off scenarios in this box. So it comes out to about, you know, the price of an escape game per scenario, something like that. And I think it was reasonable. Years progress. I'm going to go ahead and spoil it. It's not going to be on my top 10 played games this year, but I liked my play of it. I think that's the best way to describe it. It's a neat concept, and sometimes it's going to be a winner for people. Jeff purchased it based on my recommendation. I actually forgot to check in with Jeff to see if he liked it or not.
Yeah.
But I think it's an enjoyable game, but it's not going to knock your socks off.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair way to put it. And I think it's a similar issue like Roll to Resolve. If Roll to Resolve is not your cup of tea, I don't think that this is gonna change. This doesn't change the mechanism enough to fix that.
Yeah.
Not for me anyways.
Well, moving on to my next game and something that will actually change the mechanism up slightly, and I finally got it to the table, Dinosaur World.
Oh, nice.
So designed by Brian Lewis, Marissa Masura, David McGregor, published by Pandasaurus Games. I've mentioned it multiple times, finally got it to the table. Because I found that this box was very intimidating, just by the shot size of the box and the number of components. However, like Dinosaur Island, the gameplay was streamlined enough to actually make sense. And what is that gameplay? Well, if you are building your own dinosaur theme park, but what makes this different from Dinosaur Island is that there's a Jeeple tour. And at the end of the round, you drive your guests around your park to see a certain number of attractions. As the rounds progress, though, if you continually take your guests to see the same Stegosaurus or ride the same roller coaster, they get bored, which means less excitement. This is a fresh enough spin on the core concept of Dinosaur Island. But I will warn everyone, though, the boredom markers are so minuscule that I had to actually pick up some small dice to use as counters instead. So there's a little production issues, in my opinion. And I will say that they have starting recommendation, like tiles for you to use, the dinosaur and like a starting building of some kind. Mm-hmm. And they're not balanced whatsoever. So that took me out of the game the second time I played it. That was really frustrating because the first time I played, I had a Stegosaurus and a casino. The casino was cool because you essentially roll five die and whatever the most symbol is, you get a coin for each of those symbols. So it's like gambling on it.
Yeah.
It's really neat. The second time I played it, I had a Hadrosaurus, which is another, you know, omnivore.
Mm-hmm.
Herbivore. Yeah. And then the building was a raptor pen. That sounds really cool, right? No.
Not a
match. It was a security building, and you put security on it, and it gives you victory points for every small
predator
that's near it. Well, you started me off with a plant-eating dinosaur, and you wanted... I don't know. That was frustrating. I didn't think about it until I started playing. I'm like, well, this sucks.
Yeah.
But... regardless, I'd recommend this if you like Dinosaur Island, Dulosaur Island, Dinosaur Island Roar and Write. There's enough in this genre. I think it's a neat game. I think the footprint is too big. I think there was some production problems and some balancing issues, which kind of comes with a lot of Kickstarter-style games. But at the same time, even though I knew that Raptor Pen and that Hadrosaurus don't go together, I still played it through. I didn't stop halfway through. And this is while I was on Nights. So I was sleep deprived and I still wanted to keep playing because I did enjoy the game.
Yeah.
So what I would say is it's a neat game, but take it with a grain of salt.
Gotcha. So Raptor to your head, would you choose Dinosaur Island or Dinosaur World?
Honestly, I would probably go with Dinosaur World.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, I know they do a little bit different things, but.
They do, because I think Dinosaur Island Roar and Write replaces Dinosaur Island.
Yeah, yeah, you did mention that.
I also haven't played the expansion for Dinosaur Island yet. That's got to get to the table at some point. You know, there's so much time to play all these games. But I don't know. I'm a dinosaur fanatic now, and especially if we ever have kids, and that's something I could teach the kids about dinosaurs. Hopefully they'll like that. I could see this staying in my collection.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
All right. All right. Well, fortunately, I am Chris Pratt's character, Owen something, and I can call off the raptor that's to your head, so good choice.
Blue.
Blue, yes, Blue.
That was the prized one.
Down Blue. You're welcome. All right. So my last game that I'm going to talk about in recent plays for this week is a digital game, so I'm going to cheat a little bit. And that would be Lorenzo Il Magnifico, which is available on Steam. It's originally designed by Flaminia Bresini, Virginio Gigli, and Simone Luciani, and published by Cranio Creations, though this particular app was developed by Studio Clangore. So Lorenzo Il Magnifico is kind of in the vein of Grand Austria Hotel and Voyages of Marco Polo. That's kind of that same similar design team. Or Coimbra, except this one does not have dice drafting. This one is just dice worker placement. So basically, dice get rolled. There's an orange, white, and black die that everyone shares. And then you have to send them to one of four different towers to do a set collection element. Basically, you're trying to build an engine, collect nobles who are worth a bunch of points, build up faith in the church and build up your military or militia prowess, I guess. And so this is one that in person, in the physical cardboard, I do not like this game at all. It is way too tight. So there are, in a four-player game, let me start with a two-player game, actually. So in a two-player game, only one person can run their production engine before that space is gone. So that makes two-player way too tight because it basically shuts down one thing for somebody. or makes that like the first place you go every round. In a 4 and 3 player game, that's no longer the case. The production's unlimited, but you get a -3 to the dice value penalty in order to produce a second, or for the second and onward position, people running that engine. And then once a tower has been visited, you now have to pay a penalty to go visit it. So I think it's like 5 coins or something like that. And so it's really hard to do anything, because you can go visit one tower unrestricted in a 4-player game before all the towers are going to be visited at the end of one round. And you have 4 workers, actually. I don't know. It's just way too tight for me in a in-person situation where it's a 2-hour game. But when I play it on the app in 30 to 45 minutes and the person I'm playing against is an AI and not another human, I don't know. It makes me less mad at the person I'm sitting across from, I guess. So I don't know. That's my own personal quirk, probably. I know it seems like a lot of people love the game in person and have problems with the app. But the app is mostly positive reviews on Steam. So I'm not the only person who likes it. But I might be the only person who prefers it to the physical version.
I find that interesting, since you've had such praise for Grand Austria Hotel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's because Grand Austria Hotel is a little bit more because it's dice drafting, the interaction is at just that one spot at the market, and then it's do your own thing. So the actions get a little bit weaker. But in this, everyone shares the same dice values, and the interaction's still at the market, but it's now at what you are getting for yourself. Instead, so it's the prize or reward you're getting is what you're competing for, rather than just the die itself. So I don't know. I like the app, and I think the app's probably a good way to see if you would like the game or not. Because you can play it with other players, or you can play it AI, and just kind of a good way to learn the game. But I also just wanted to play the app because I saw the big box was coming out on Miniature Market, and the big box has 2 expansions in it and is $80, which, so it's like $30 more than the base game. But yeah. Nicole and I wouldn't really ever play it together, so it'd be silly to get. Gotcha. And the app is like $10, so I get my fix in that way.
Yeah, and if you don't like it, even though you did, you know, you're only out 10. Well, talking about a new take on a game that I've mentioned before, so kind of following along on my banter theme, I'm going to mention the Railroad Inc. expansions. Now, we've talked about these games before, and I'm not going to even try to pronounce the publisher or the designer's names, because I'm going to butcher one of them. But Horrible Guild made this game. And we've played Railroad Inc. probably 50 times at least at this point, but we haven't actually mixed in a lot of the expansions. And it sounds like something that you guys have done a lot more than us, especially since we got the Kickstarter fulfilled over the summer.
Right.
So we finally pulled out the Blazing Red Edition and then an expansion from that recent Kickstarter. So we'll start with Blazing Red. So we played Lava. Lava, for the listeners out there, you start with a volcano in the middle of your board, and you must take the largest lava area that is enclosed to score the most points. So this one was just okay, in my opinion. I think I prefer the lake version, because it seems like lava versus lake is the same kind of core concept.
Mm-hmm.
So lake is in the blue edition, and I like that one better than this lava, okay. But it was fine. I lost.
Can I interject?
You can.
Did you play it on challenge version still? Or did
No.
you play... Okay, so you play that as base Railroad Inc. with the red expansion and blue.
Yep.
Okay. Carry on, sir.
All right, fine. So the other expansion that came in the red edition was Meteor, where you roll 2 die, and one die will tell you how far from your current position you must draw a crater, and the other die will tell you which direction. And if this meteor lands on a rail or a road you've already built, it's destroyed. However, you can build on this crater later, and if you end a road or a rail at the crater, you get 10 points, or 2 points, sorry, 10 points would be insane, just 2. I like this one a lot more, but I still succumb and lost to Veronica. What's new? So that's a common theme. She's too good at this game. All right. Anyways, the last one we played was from the Kickstarter, which was Tetromino from the arcade expansion.
Okay.
And this one, you fill in the round marker boxes with a given shape. And if you can fill the square with road or rail by the end of the game, you get points. It's like 1 point. Hmm. But if you don't, you lose a single point. And this expansion was labeled as easy and was the perfect one to end the night on. I might be biased because I actually won on this one.
There's more.
But I like this expansion. I thought it was easy to kind of throw in to have it. We could play it on, you know, with a few other expansions, believe it or not. And it's one that I'd recommend including if you've played this game a couple of times. I like this one the best.
Yeah, those extra expansions all look like they add some neat little things that, especially since you guys have played it around like 50 times, would be a good thing to spice it up. But yeah, I haven't tried any of those ones. We've done all the green and all the yellow.
Okay.
But we don't own blue or red. My father-in-law owns red, I think we got him. But we haven't even played it with him, so... they have so many rolling rights there, you know? We're always chasing the new hot rolling right.
Apparently. Yeah, this was enjoyable. In the arcade expansion, there's a Pac-Man knockoff, Space Invaders, and I'm drawing a blank on what the fourth one was. So this Tetromino was obviously Tetris, and then the fourth one was... I just can't remember. But two of them were Take That. She didn't want to do Take That. Yeah, and then the Pac-Man... The Pac-Man, actually, I thought was the most interesting one, but she thought it was a little too complicated, even though I think it was listed as moderate. So we stuck with the Tetris-style one, and it was cool.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's always one that I like playing, and having that basically endless number of expansions is pretty good.
Yeah, and it's nice that we're finally using them, even though we've played this game so much with family, friends. I've introduced this to so many different people. So it's cool that we can finally start to do some of the expansions on our own and that I finally won a game against her, which is the first time in probably like 8 months. You jest, but it's true.
I know. I did, because I did witness the one time that you guys, I mean, I'm sure it's happened more than once, but there was when the three of us played, it was a tie. And wait, hold on. No. I counted this wrong.
No, it was a tie, but she won the tiebreaker.
Yeah, I know.
It was like, oh, it was just heart-wrenching. Well, what do you say we mosey on over to figure out what was our favorite games that we played this year?
And finally, we talk about the best new-to-us games of 2021.
A lot of content creators at this time of the year will want to go over the best games that they've played that came out in 2021. Now, unfortunately for Andrew and I, we aren't given review copies yet.
That's the new hotness trash.
Yeah.
We're real people.
So for us, being more realistic, we thought we would cover the top 10 games. So these are the best games that we happen to play this year, even if it was a game from, say, 2004. Named Dominion. I don't know, but we'll see. But before we get to our top 10, just like any good top 10 list, you always have to have an honorable mention. And since Andrew has a few more than I do, I'll let him lead off.
I couldn't figure it out, man. All right, so the first one that I would like to mention honorably is the newest game on my list, probably the only one from 2021, I think. That would be Seize the Bean, published by Andy Couch and Dylan Howard Cromwell, published by Quality Beasts. Nicole discussed it last week, and it's just a little, I've only played it once, so I couldn't put it in the top 10, but I did have a good time when we played it.
Gotcha. So for my honorable mention, it was actually Edge of Darkness, which is a fantastic game by John DeClair, and I personally love Mystic Veil, and it's a card crafting game, deck construction that we'll actually be reviewing on an upcoming episode, so every listener can get a little feel about what that game is. But this game actually takes that core mechanism and adds deterministic combat and this really cool dice tower where monsters will be invading your town. You drop player cubes into this dice tower, and depending on color majority, when the monster attacks, determines which character defends. And while the game is a bit bigger than the gameplay experience, this is one that at least deserved to be recognized on my list.
Yeah, that's one that I want to try again. And I think I need to try it at solo again to see how it fares that way. I know Nicole and I had some problems with it, but I think we might have played it too late at night too.
Yeah, or I'll play with you.
Yeah, because we know how much I love direct conflict games with you.
Yes, two players. Yep, it's great.
My next honorable mention would be Abyss with the Kraken expansion, designed by Bruno Catala and Charles Chevalier, published by Bombix. So this one's honorable because I think I technically played the base game before, and so it's just really adding the Kraken expansion. Though I do think that elevates the game, because it adds this element to the currency where you can get black tainted pearls. So in Abyss, it's basically a set collection game, and you can dive into the deeps to try and fight monsters, or you can just collect these five different sea creature races. And so you are adding a sixth faction in now, which is the smugglers, and whoever has the most at the end of the game loses a bunch of points, basically. So it gets easier to play the game if you have these black pearls, but you will get penalized majorly at the end of the game. So kind of, I like that push your luck mechanism in a lot of games. So good addition.
Nice. It looks like a cool box cover, which draws me in, but I don't know. It's not one of those games that, hey, let's play that. But
yeah, I think it is in a weird spot where it's like kind of a light game, and it is kind of take that-y. So you need to be, and you definitely need four. I don't think it's good at two.
Okay.
So,
which I guess is why it makes honorable mention and not actually the top 10.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about our favorite games this year.
Well, what about before that? Crossover predictions?
Oh.
Looking at your list? Not looking at my list. I'm looking at my list, not looking at your list.
One.
I think two.
All right, well, we'll find out. So we'll cut straight to the chase and talk about number 10. So my number 10, and this is one I kind of debated whether it would be a crossover or not, and it's going to be Viscounts of the West Kingdom. So I've really enjoyed the West Kingdom trilogy. And this was a unique style for the deck building element with a small tableau and rondelle mechanism. This was also the easiest to run AI within this trilogy. And I'm excited for the expansions. And I think these expansions will either make it rise up the list, like of some of my favorite games, or could potentially fall the other way. Expansions don't always help a game. So at least for right now, Viscounts deserves to be number 10.
So it will not make it stay the same, whatever it does, for sure.
No, it's hard to keep it status quo.
I know. I was just being a jerk. Because my number 10 in a ultra crossover is also Viscounts of the West Kingdom, which is why I was laughing when you...
Oh, my God.
ultimate crossover. I'm thinking it might be three now. Jeez. Yeah, I don't really have too much to add. This is... I think when we were talking, I said it was my least favorite of the West Kingdom trilogy, but it's still a great game. Like I said at that time, I was saying it's, you know, a least favorite in a overall great series. So, I had a lot of fun with this. I agree. The solo is pretty good in this. I just had some problems with gameplay, I think, slowing down because of some symbols and stuff.
Nice. Well, I think we'll see. I think the issue is what's new to me isn't necessarily new to you. And I think that's what I was struggling with, whether things could be a crossover or not.
Yeah, that's fair.
But we'll continue up our list.
So you're saying I have the upper hand. I see.
I think you do, but at the same time, I also play a lot more games than you do.
Yes, that's true.
And I'll actually look up how many games I played this year after I discuss my number nine. So number nine for me is Dominion. I loved playing this game with my buddies Mike and then with Jeff and Rob at my bachelor party. This game really solidified my love for deck builders. I love how versatile the game system is. I really just wish it had a full dedicated solo mode. There's some on Board Game Geek, but I want an official one. And considering there are 14 expansions, one of them could easily have been to make it soloable. The gameplay is why it deserves to be on this list, but not being able to play solo hurts its position and why I haven't purchased any of the expansions for this game yet.
Yeah, I mean, I knew you had a lot of fun with it. I was surprised it's on this list only because of it not being soloable, and I know that was a big hurdle for you getting it in the first place.
Yeah.
All right, my number nine, with some trepidation, is Bonfire by Stefan Feld, published by Pegasus Spiele. Trepidation comes from the amount of AP that this game can induce. I enjoyed this enough solo, though. So solo saved this game for me somehow. And I don't think you would like this solo, probably, because I think you have a lot different tastes compared to me in solo games.
Yeah.
And I don't know. This was a one that I didn't like that much at first, but we played it. I've played it five times, I think. So I think just kind of the more I played it, it just kind of cemented this feeling. And when I play a game enough times, it's a lot different than I think you. But when I play like four or five times, I get to the point that I feel comfortable enough to pull it out, not really have to reread the rules. I can just kind of skim and be playing the game in 10 or 15 minutes. And so that's that comfort level always helps me with a game. And that's kind of, I think, helped Bonfire, because the theme is like meh and the variability is not that great. But a new expansion came out, which definitely is going to help the variability. And I am excited to try and play that expansion with, if I presume James bought it, because that's what he does. So
it's fair. I'm hesitant to get this to the table just yet because it's just the sheer amount of components. It's a little, it's just like Dinosaur World. It's a little intimidating. So we'll see. I'll let you know my thoughts once I get to it. And before we talk about our next number, so the games, I've played 580 games this year.
That's total plays.
Total plays. Okay. 178 of them being unique games.
Wow.
And 150 are new to me.
Hmm.
So it seems crazy, as though I was playing quite a few games this year.
You didn't let me put it in a news alert.
You can retroactively breaking fill news. That in.
Yeah, maybe I should find it.
All right. Man.
I don't think I've played that many games this year, but I don't keep track, so I'll just assume I did.
Or how about you say you got half as many
I got
games.
About half. Yeah, probably pretty close.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving into number eight. So number eight for me is Scythe. One of my future colleagues, also named Josh, great name, said that this was his favorite game of all time. And unfortunately, at the time when he told me that, I hadn't played my copy yet. So I quickly changed that. I've played it solo and multiplayer. I've done one-offs as well as played through an entire campaign. In fact, as of this recording, Scythe is in the top 10 most played games of 2021. And the reason is, it's a fantastic gameplay. It's a perfect mashup of Euro-style resource management and Ameritrash-style unpredictable combat. Or, you could just avoid combat altogether. There's so many different ways of winning this game, and I typically have been more combat-eccentric. However, I'm going to specifically highlight my buddy Mike again. He developed this unstoppable military force with a lot of combat cards, so I actually utilized an encounter card to score a huge amount of points by owning farm spaces, and I ultimately won the game, but at the same time, I have to give credit to Mike because he played so well, and that was his first time ever playing this game. So it's proof that this game, just there's something about it, is it may look a little intimidating, but it truly isn't. Even the first time player can compete against somebody that's played it I think I've ended up 20 or 25 times this year. So this game is fantastic and worthy of this position.
Nice. Yeah, that's one that I probably need to get the app so that I can play it, try it again. Because I know everybody really seems to like it. I feel like I'm the only person, me and Nicole.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's the great thing about this hobby, right?
Yeah, there's at least 8 other games I like, you know. Speaking of one, my number 8 is Carcassonne from Klaus-Jürgen Vreda and Z-Man Games. This, I think, is probably going to be the oldest game on the list.
Yeah.
Published in 2000 and new to me in 2021. Nailed it. the reason this is a high one for me is, I think, just when I talked about it in the podcast, I said it's like a quintessential lazy Sunday game. I just really like that feeling of, I mean, you could play this game in probably 30 minutes if you took it really seriously, or you can just, you know, be chatting, the kids playing, and then just be slowly doing a tile layer. And I kind of get that same feeling from like Cascadia when we played that too. I really just like that feeling of tile laying games. And I played this a lot with my father-in-law, so it kind of has that nostalgia feeling there as well. Yeah, so that is my number 8, Carcassonne.
Okay. Yeah, Jeff's father went down the rabbit hole of the hobby recently and purchased this, and he actually didn't care for it as much.
Yeah.
Which is, but it could, you know, tile laying game is still a unique thing. There aren't that many within the genre, so it's a good pickup. Maybe I'll play it at some point. We'll see. All right, well, moving into number 7, which for me is going to be Underwater Cities. I, oddly enough, tend to play board games when I'm transitioning off nights back to days. And I ended up playing this one 5 times one Saturday because I really wanted to beat the solo mode. Which, in the solo mode, you have to get to 100 points and meet certain objectives. Now, this is a tableau-style game, and for me, they're actually a little bit harder to remember to utilize some of those cards. But the mechanism of utilizing a colored card that matches the colored worker placement space to get 2 actions instead of 1 is just straight brilliant. Now, this is one that I can't think of too many games that offer that. And I haven't played it since that long Saturday session. But at the same time, I'm going to rectify that soon and get it back to the table within the next couple of weeks. At least that's the goal.
Yeah. Did you say with the expansion for this?
I think I threw in some of the cards.
Yeah. For sure, for the inlaid boards.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think you can add in all of the expansion content for the solo mode, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Yeah, I like this one a lot. We played it, I think it's the first one we played 2 Christmases ago. Maybe it was last Christmas. It definitely was not a 2021 game for me, but it was. It would definitely be on this list if it had been. All right, my number 7 is going to be, I'm hoping a crossover when I bumped up to 3, but we'll see. Probably not now. Fleet the Dice Game, designed by Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle, published by Eagle Griffin Games. This is, I think, my favorite of the heavy roll and writes. I think it's probably my favorite roll and write, period. I don't remember if we did that list. If we did that list and it wasn't number 1, then I'm a liar.
We did. Because that's the podcast we did, Rolling Realms. We reviewed Rolling Realms, and you had this in the mix. It was top 3, and you said any given moment they could all interchange.
Yeah. This one, at this current state today, is my number 1 roller.
I love it.
Definitely the number 1 for 2021. Okay. And so, yeah. I just like having those 2 different boards that you do.
Yeah.
Something you kind of get a heavy feel in a 30 to 45 minute, maybe 60 minutes, depending how much you think about it. But, and a good solo.
It is. I'm going to disappoint you, though.
That's fine.
It didn't make my top 10.
That's fine. I got my initial vote, which was 2. I already know that's a lock.
Yeah,
pop,
for sure
lock
it is.
And drop it.
God. It is a fantastic game, but it's hard for me to put Rollin' Rights this high. But you know what I can put this high? You'll see in a moment. So for number 6 is Hadrian's Wall.
Oh my God, get out of here. You can't put Rollin' Rights this high.
Yeah, I can't. A Vorpal Right, though, can. So this is a This was a great game released in 2021, and I'm shocked by how much I love this game and how frequently I want to play it. And I think it boils Paladins of the West Kingdom into a more digestible offering. It gives me those eureka moments, but in a meatier experience than most other Verb and Rights, including Fleet the Dice game. Yeah. I like the solo mode out of the box, but I love the solo campaign that was released later. Multiplayer was fine, and we played it at Meeple Night Con, and I won. So maybe I'm a little biased because of that. But regardless, I really love this for its solo feature, and it's a fantastic game and worthy of this position.
No, I think it's funny to me. I think this one, the solo campaign was the issue. Fixed my issue, rather.
Yeah.
Of the variability. I just didn't feel like there was a lot of change. And the solo campaign forces you to play certain ways.
Yeah.
And so I like that a lot better. But I want that in the multiplayer mode. Because I still don't like the solo mode penalty. And I don't remember what it is exactly anymore. Something about when you scout, you have to pay an extra thing. I don't know. There's some penalty that I didn't like that I felt was over penalizing you.
Here's you had to draw an extra scout.
You had to draw an extra card. That's what it was.
Yes.
Things that where you would have to pay somebody else something, you now have to draw an extra card, and that's way more penalizing than giving somebody else an extra resource.
I don't know. Those resources are tight, especially the brick, because that's what you have to trade.
Yeah, but getting hit by people is escalatingly worse.
It's like you're unprepared,
which is very easy to be because. In the first couple, anyways,
it's a fantastic game, and in fact, you can't see it, but it's actually on my. I've got a little small table that I have in here when I'm on nights. If it's a little slow, I'll play a game, and it's currently on my table right now.
Nice.
So, what's your number six?
My number six is going to be Res Arcana from Tom Lehman, Sandcastle Games. So, this is kind of in the vein of Roll for the Galaxy hand management type of game, except this is a far more strategic version of the Roll for the Galaxy formula because you just have, I believe it's 7 cards that you get dealt at the beginning of the game, and that's what you got. So you come up with a strategy based on those 7 cards, and you draw a hand of 3 to start, and you're trying to be the most powerful mage and gain control over certain locations by creating elements. And so you have to know what your engine is and be very strategic about it, which can be a little bit daunting, I guess, for introducing it to people if you've played it enough times. I haven't had to do that yet. I've only played it 2-player with Nicole. I don't know. I like this because you can fit it in 30 to 45 minutes, and it's pretty strategic. Not a lot of, I mean, there's still luck and there's definitely variability to it because your 7 cards can be a lot weaker than somebody else's 7 cards. Mm-hmm. But so you can just try and do the best you can. And that's sometimes you just got to be happy with that. And it's a, 30 to 45 minute experience. So
cool.
Just and play another one.
And another expansion's coming out for it.
Yeah, I have the first expansion, haven't played it, so I paused on the second one before.
Smart. You're not like me. All right.
I'm so smart, not like you. Nice.
Yeah, I'm a bozo. Thanks, Nicole.
Slurp, slurp.
Slurp, slurp. All right, so now moving into our top 5. So with number 5, which is Marvel Champions. Now, I'm going to admit, first off, that I had a lot of reservations with this game. There was a ton of hype with it, and after I played through it a few times, I didn't understand the hype whatsoever. And then I watched a few more playthrough videos and realized I was playing it wrong. Surprise! Well, that changed everything. And like Scythe, this has actually been in my top 10 most played games of 2021. What's unique, though, is that I've only played solo. In fact, single-handed solo even, which I normally don't like to do. But it's just, there's something about this game. I absolutely love it. I've bought everything they've come out with now. I've played through the first campaign, which was the Red Skull. I'm enthralled with Marvel at the moment. No, I haven't seen the new Spider-Man movie. That's going to be in a couple of days.
Well, that's Sony Marvel. That's way different.
Yeah. But this one just knocks it out of the park for me. I absolutely love this system. And I know from my buddy Jeff, it wasn't a hit for him, but it truly is a hit for me and why it's made my top five.
Man, I feel like everything we recommend to Jeff is a dud.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
If you hear a recommendation from us, Jeff, run the other way.
Choose the opposite. He likes Arkham Horror. I mean,
oh, that's good. Yeah. That's
close
a good one.
Enough.
Yeah. All right. My number five is Tawantin Suyu, designed by David Turchi and published by Board and Dice. I don't believe you've played this one yet, have you?
Not yet.
Yeah. So this is actually, it's not in the T series, right? Because that's Daniele Tassini. Yeah. But it's kind of that Mesoamerican. So it tricks you into thinking it's in the T series. With this is Tawantin Suyu, the Incan Empire. Sorry. And this is basically straight up worker placement, very thinky. I would prefer to play this at 2 and 3, but still had a great time at 4. You just have to be prepared for a 2 or 3 hour night. But the downtime isn't killer because generally you have a lot to think about on your turn as well. Top of my list is going to tend to be the heavier, thinkier games. Just because at this moment in time, after playing Teo, I remember how much I like these type of thinky Euro games, even though they're ones that I tend to play a little bit less just because of time and energy levels at night. But
yeah, I'm right there with you, and I think that's why Fleet didn't make my yeah. list. It's something about these meteor experiences last with you longer than just pulling out a little roll and write, even if it's a great game, which it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. Well, number four actually is... Or, hold on, I got to do the real one. Number four. Number four on my list actually does make the criteria of the T series, and that's Teotihuacan. And I've said the story before, but this was another one of those that I ended up playing it 4 times, one specific Saturday. And for a 2-hour-plus game to be played that many times, there must be something great about it. Mm-hmm. Spoiler, there is. The variety for how each game is played is what brings me back over and over again. And like Scythe, your strategy will actually depend on how the board is set up, even from the base game, not the expansion like Andrew mentioned earlier. So this is, it's one of my favorite games, and I actually haven't played that expansion you mentioned, so I almost pulled it down the other day to put it on the table. But having such Dinosaur World and then Role Player Adventures, all these big experiences, I kind of needed a little bit of a break from that. But it's a fantastic game, and even though I only played it that one time, for multiple times that one Saturday, I still loved it so much and why it's worthy of being this high.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a great one. Even just base game is great. I think late pre-classic period is like, now that I have played it, I would never not play with it because it has those two things that I love in every first expansion.
Yep.
But yeah.
And I liked it better than Tekkenyu, which is why that one's not on this list. I still enjoyed Tekkenyu. It would probably be pretty high up here, but I still have to give the nod to Teotihuacan.
Nice. All right. My number four is definitely the final crossover on the list. And that would be Lost Ruins of Arnak.
Woo! Way too low.
Mean and Elwin. You haven't played all the great awesomeness from Czech Games Edition that I've played, so spoiler alert.
Tonight's episode is brought to you by Czech Games Edition, our unofficial sponsor of Meeple Knight.
Or at least of Andrew, for sure. Which should be no surprise. So, yeah, this is like that Indiana Jones theme. This is our only review game, I think, on my list. Yep. And so, I don't know, the solo in this just really knocked it out of the park for me, especially that campaign. And it really just allowed me to see how excellent the theme integration with the mechanisms was, in a way that I haven't seen in a lot of Euro games. Because this is, at its core, still kind of a deck-building, worker placement, resource management game. So, you know, can I add anything else? Just no dice. But yeah, I had a great experience, loved the thematic integration, and gave me a new appreciation for theme in general. And so, also had to rank it last minute because I thought initially our rules were that we couldn't rank review games. So,
That might have been my mistake because looking at my list, Lost Ruins of Arnak has made it, and in fact that is the only review game that made my top 10 list as well. Yeah. So maybe that was a mistake on my end, but
no, I mean,
we'll see how high it ranks on mine.
I mean, I think based on our scores, that's probably about right anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So number three. Number three is Imperium Classics or Imperium Legends. And you knew I had to have a Dave Turchi design on here other than Teotihuacan, which he helped. But this one is another great game that was released in 2021. And while the rulebook was a major hurdle to get over, once you do, the unique artwork on every card from the Misho and the fantastic deck-building mechanism makes this game incredible. There are 16 total playable factions between Classics and Legends, and all of them can also be played as the AI opponent, with each having their own unique playstyles. This is a difficult AI to beat on normal difficulty, and I can imagine plays similarly to an actual opponent. However, I don't know if I'd want to play it beyond solo. Maybe I'll teach it to you one day. But this is just a fantastic solo experience and definitely deserves to be my third favorite game of 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to comment on this one. I have not played this
yet.
Davey T, not surprised. Yeah, maybe that's going to be the trade out for Destinies.
Yeah.
All right. My number three, also from Czech Games Edition, designed by Vlada Schwadl, is Dungeon Pets.
Wow.
This is another one that the theme is actually surprisingly good. And you are dungeon lords taking care of pets that have various needs. Or actually, you're not the dungeon lords. Sorry, you are the imp family that's taking care of these pets to sell them off to the dungeon lords. And so, certain dungeon lords want them to be mean. Certain want them to be happy. Some want them to be magical. You know, there's lots of different things. And so I just thought the thematic integration was great. I don't know if there's just something messed up in my brain that I like these 2012 to 2015 era Czech games designs, but or if they just had a certain design philosophy at that time. Well, just kidding, 2011. Dungeon Pets was 2011. Oh, man. Yeah, but I liked this one at two. I liked it at three. I haven't played it at four yet, but will definitely do so. It does not play solo. A lot of Czech games don't play solo from that time.
Yeah.
So,
which is why you'll never see them on my list, unfortunately.
Yep.
All right, then. So getting into our top two with number two. So this is where I placed Lost Ruins of Arnak. And obviously, we've talked about this game a lot, including that separate review. So I won't belabor my points much, other than that expansion coming looks incredible. And so for the listeners out there, expansion, unique player powers means there's a different way to clear the item and artifact cards quicker between rounds. And the thing I will say to kind of put on top of what Andrew had already praised about this game is that this designer couple have listened extremely well to feedback, yeah. and it makes me thrilled to play this game more.
Yeah.
And even more so with the if they come out with another solo campaign, which could be easily achieved. I think this is fantastic. And there's a this game earned a perfect 10 from Meeple Knight for a reason.
Yep, for sure. Nothing to add here. Even good stuff.
Yeah. All right, so what's the next Czech Games edition?
My number two is actually not Czech Games edition.
I'm shocked.
Because I'm cheating, possibly. I don't think I'm cheating.
You're cheating.
It's from Bezier Games, designed by Ted Alsbach and Akihisa Okui. One Night Ultimate Alien, which is a complete standalone game. And the only One Night games I've played before was Werewolf. And
cheating.
This just cemented how great the One Night Ultimate series is for me. Though there is a caveat, because if Jeff is listening, he will say, no, that it didn't go over great with his family. But
they didn't want to play after reading the rules. Sorry, Jeff, we're striking out with your family, man.
But this does need to find the right group. When it finds the right group, those plays are in my top plays of all time, like top memories.
Definitely playing fills games. The holes.
Fills a lot of gaming holes. But because it is required to get the best group or like find the right group, it gets bumped from one to two. So, but Alien is my favorite in the series. I just love the app interjects some randomness. So the game's not exactly the same. But at the same time, that makes it a little more advanced. So if One Night Werewolf rules are too advanced, do not get this one instead.
Okay. And yet, I still haven't played.
Yeah.
I feel like I haven't played many of your top 10 here.
I think the more we review and discuss games, I realize we just like different things in games. There's a few times that games fill enough holes that we, you know, they can fill both of our holes.
Oh, God. Nope. Now, would you say this game is replayable? All right. But in all seriousness, I think before we get to our favorite games that we played in 2021, I think that's a huge positive that we do have such different interests, that we like playing games together, but at the same time, we like different games. And that gives us kind of different perspective. We look at things differently, and what makes the reason why we started this podcast in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And finally, number one. All right, so number one, I'm not going to mention the game just yet, because what could be so good that it beat one of my favorite games, not only that I've played this year, but of all time, with Lost Ruins of Arnak. And it's the game, of course, that was always compared to it. So that is Dune Imperium.
Yeah.
So this is predominantly a worker placement game with a strong deck-building mechanism based on the intellectual property. This was another game I was hesitant to like because of the hype, and boy, was I wrong. Over just a few days, I ended up playing this 10 times. I put it away to play a few other games for the podcast, and then immediately brought it back out after seeing the movie. I have the upgraded components arriving soon, literally like 2 days from now, which will upgrade soldiers from wooden cubes to miniatures, and workers from wooden pawn-looking things to miniatures as well. There is also an expansion coming for this too, which offers new worker placement slots and the ability to get new warship for combat. Oh, and more cards. So when I debated between this and Lost Ruins, I ultimately chose this one because it started with unique starting powers and leaned a little more into the deck building mechanism. And honestly, that intellectual property is what put it over the top, because that movie was fantastic. So for me, my favorite game that I've played that was new to me for 2021 is Dune Imperium.
Nice. All right. My number one, we'll actually see if you can guess. I would not have guessed your number one. I will tell you what I would have guessed after, I guess. But
okay.
I'll just tell you now. I really thought it was going to be Star Wars Rebellion. I thought that you... Really, I don't know. You just were so emotional about the play, explaining that play to me. that I thought that you liked it, but I guess not number one. Not even top 10 material, I thought.
I would agree with that, but it's also, that is a game that's even just too hard to get to the table. I played it once with Jeff. Apparently the expansion truly helps the game, and we didn't play with that expansion. I wish I had known that beforehand. But I loved my time with Jeff before he was getting ready to leave to get through that, as well as War of the Ring. They were both extremely enjoyable, but I just couldn't see putting those as a top 10. Gotcha. Maybe if we made like our top 10 experiences, like favorite experiences of 2021, gotcha. Obviously Meeple Night Con is number one, but number two is beating Veronica and Railroad Inc. And number three would be those games with Jeff.
Funny.
You're already writing down. This is going to be the next podcast. We're not going to do
a revised top 10. I'm writing down other things that I'm surprised were not on your list, because I was going to talk about that after. But let's just move on to my number one for now, and we'll talk about you some more later. My number one is one that didn't go over too well with you, I'm pretty sure, and that would be Alchemists.
Yeah, I figured.
From Matush Kotri. And Czech Games Edition. I think this is Euro resource management. The theme, again, I think is strong. And I love the deduction element in this game. There is downtime, no doubt, but I am sitting there deducing stuff the whole time. And like trying to figure out, okay, well, if I do this and then this, oh, well, that card's gone now. Okay, so what do I need instead in order to figure it out? I don't know. I just love the mental gymnastics it makes me do, to try and figure out, what is it? There's 8 or 10 ingredients or something, and you're trying to figure out the chemical composition of each one. I think the gameplay itself is not super complex, but when you throw in the the deduction aspect of this game is very complex, and it's kind of I don't know any other games that have this level of deduction in them.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, like, Clue isn't high level thinking, right? There are people who can do it really quickly.
Yeah.
But it's not any more challenging or less challenging. If you're good at it, you just get it done quicker. And Clue's not really a great example because there's definitely a lot of luck of getting in the right room and stuff like that. But that's just kind of the mainstream version.
Yeah.
That's why I think about it.
It was an enjoyable game. I think just the sheer, like, you make one mistake and you lost.
Yeah.
You just couldn't make a mistake. You couldn't make one incorrect assumption, which, I mean, that's the principle of scientific research, is you make a lot of assumptions. You use the scientific method, but you're still going to make mistakes. And one mistake in this game, and you're going down this rabbit hole that you're thrown off.
I mean, I think that does depend on the whole group, though, right? Like, if the whole group makes mistakes, it's less penalizing. And I don't know, maybe it always happens that, thematically, if you guys are making mistakes, then I learn from those mistakes. And so I'm learning from other people's mistakes. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we've played it so many times over that summer sessions that Brian and you, I really enjoyed those games that we played together. Brian and you were just on a different level than James and I. James and I kind of got a little more frustrated and we made like one incorrect assumption and it just kind of,
fair.
It left a bad taste in my mouth.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I didn't expect you to have this anywhere near your list. So.
Especially since I sold it to you.
Since I now have your copy.
Yeah. All right. So what other games did you think that were going to make my list?
Well,
your list kind of went as expected for me.
Yeah.
Although I did forget about Viscounts of the West Kingdom. I did not expect that to be on your top 10.
Yeah.
So you won the crossover battle.
Well, I knew that as soon as you said Viscounts at number 10. So I thought Root might be on your list.
Haven't played it yet.
Well, you played the digital app, I guess. And so that to you just meant you couldn't put it on your list. And then I wasn't sure when you first played Too Many Bones. I wasn't sure if that was in 2020 or 2021. So
August 2020.
Okay. See, I don't record any of my plays, so no one can disprove if I actually played one in 2020 first, because I just am going based on my memory.
Yeah. And my memory is obviously better.
Well, your memory's digital and has, like, you know, five bajillion terabytes.
That's the joke. Yeah. But I did have to look it up. I actually thought Marvel Champions was a 2020 game, yeah. And it wasn't. I even thought Teotihuacan and Underwater Cities was last year. Yeah. It's just proof how long 2021 has been.
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, I mean, we've been doing this podcast since May.
That's crazy. That's crazy too. I was thinking about that. This is episode 17. We're almost at every other week. We're almost at a year.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you played. You said 180 unique games.
Or 157.
Yeah, that's almost a new game every other day.
Or you're right. 180 new games or unique games. 157 of them being new to me for 2021.
Yeah, that's impressive.
It's a lot.
Yeah. I think you have probably surpassed me in number of games played. If you've played 180 this week, this year. Yeah. Dang. Good. Yeah. Because we're not explicit.
Yeah. Clean podcast. Yeah, we'll see. I think it's just our lifestyles are a little bit different, and I think I'll start slowing down. But at the same time, I think as Veronica starts playing more and more complex games, yeah, and she's shown interest in Mystic Veil and a few others that I wouldn't have immediately taught her how to play them, and now she's at least curious in them. So I think the 2022 is going to be a bright future for games, even if it's going to be a little bit different than 2021.
Yeah. I am looking forward to it. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening and indulging us, listening to our top games of this year. And, seeing some of the highlights of our gaming, maybe not experiences, but games themselves.
And thanks for tuning in, and we'll see everybody in a fortnight.
Good night.
And good luck.
Thanks for listening to Meeple Might. Today's episode was recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia on December 20th, 2021 and uploaded using Anchor. Our theme music is All Might by Declan DP, provided by Audio Library Plus, which provides free and safe music for content creators. For all the latest from Meeple Might, follow us on Instagram, join our Facebook group, or email us at meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so until then, dream a little dream of games.